Good afternoon, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here at CKMS Radio. Got a great show on a beautiful July, on the 18th, and just thanks so much to you folks for listening in today. Great guests, returning guests, matter of fact. We're going to catch up with these guys on what's happened since they were last here, any new developments and all that sort of thing. Today's guests are Jim Dyer and Gord Grant. So let's play some music to start things off with. Jim, this is your selection. Tell us who it is and why do you like it, please?
Well, I've wanted to learn this song, and typically the way I learn a song is I get on YouTube and listen to several different versions of it to decide how I want to sound with it. The song is Try a Little Kindness. I've got somewhere, you probably don't care about who wrote it, but I can get that for you. It was made popular by Glenn Campbell. What's interesting is this song was done by Jan Arden and a group called the Sloan Ukulele or U School, and it's really an expose of ukuleles as a kid's instrument, an introduction to music, but also I think an instrument in its own right, even though it's small and simple. So so it really appealed to me. I just liked the way they make the ukulele sound, you know, happy and bright and just sort of bouncy. And you know, I think everybody will enjoy it.
All right. Go ahead, Gord.
Folks, you got Dr. Swamp here on CKMS 102.7 FM Waterloo Radio. It is the place to be for independent local music trying to make things happen.
Hi, this is jazz musician, singer, and songwriter Tim Lewis. You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS Radio Waterloo. We're live streaming on the FM band at 102.7. We're on the Rogers Digital Network at 946. Or on the internet. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and through music.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening in. And boy, wasn't that just a charming thing? We have the privilege of looking at the video here and in studio, and oh my gosh, whole room full of young people on ukulele orchestra. Good choice. How did you pick that one? Tell us the story again.
Oh, well, I had heard the song by done by Glenn Campbell, who incidentally didn't write it. I've got it somewhere in my notes who wrote it, but I'm sure mm-hmm. they don't care. But they can look that up on YouTube when if they're interested. But I happened across this one and really stuck with me, partly because I've kind of got interest in ukuleles myself. I've been playing them, and ukulele is very much a community group. There's at least in Cambridge, there's two groups. One out of Galt and one out of Hespler, and each of them have 15-20 members that kind of rotate in and out. It kind of operates more like a club than a group. And I do play it on my banjo, but I try to sort of incorporate kind of that sound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
All right, this is the part of the show where we're going to get reacquainted to our guests. Like I mentioned before, they've been in before. Jim, last time I asked you how many people sit around your Christmas holiday table and partake of that feast. How many people are sitting around the Dyer family table for a Christmas or Easter feast?
Well, my family's kind of small, and they're dispersed. They've got a niece and nephew in England and a brother in Toronto and two sisters still living in Quebec, so we don't really get together. But mm-hmm. Donna's family is, real... It's a real integrated family, and they're now into grandkids from two of the four offspring from the three sisters, and so it gets quite festive. And for an old guy like me, sometimes it gets a little loud. The kids throwing toys around and, and running wheels up and down the living room. You sort of cringe what those wheels, rubber wheels or plastic wheels, are doing to the living room floor. But
right.
Yeah, it's really Christmassy. So yeah, it's good.
Okay, let's see what our other co-host is doing here. Mr. Grant, can you tell us about yourself? How many people sit around the Grant family home picnic table holiday feast thing?
Happy to do that, Jeff. There's, I have a lot in common with our other host here, Jim. My family's not so big and spread out, but certainly my wife's family has a huge clan, and so we can be hitting 20, 25 people, and there's a lot of action and a lot of people, and we have a herd of schnoodles, poodle schnauzer mixes, and it gets pretty wild and crazy at Christmas. And
You have some curtain climbers?
Not too bad. We have curtain climbers, but they're not. It's more the schnoodles and the. We just have one toddler at the moment in the crowd. So, but that can change.
Any traditions? Are you the official maker of the stuffing for the bird, or do you guys open your Christmas presents the night of Christmas?
We take turns on that, so that gets spread out, which is kind of nice. So we bounce around. Sometimes we're in Kingsville down there in the deep southwest, and mm-hmm. sometimes we're up here in Kitchener. We kind of have different clusters of families, so we take turns on that. The best thing last year was my brother-in-law, who was told to do potatoes, decided to give all the nieces and nephews a potato peeler for Christmas, and they got to peel and mash the potatoes, which I thought was brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. That's a good story. I like that story.
Yeah.
any other hobbies on the go? Are you, I forget, did you ever poke around with guitars or music or keyboards? I don't think so. Did you?
I tried some ukulele, and I'm going to pick it up again, but ukulele is something that I'd been interested in. I have a daughter-in-law that is in on a club up in Waterloo mm-hmm. here, and we were on Zoom, but I've sort of got to find some more time and to do that. So right now we're busy thinking about going west in a converted van. So mm-hmm. that's kind of consumed my. I could take my ukulele with me, and then I would only frustrate a certain number of people for a little while, and then we'd leave.
I like the planning. That's good stuff. All right, let's play another song here. What's the second song you picked out for us here?
It's The Water is Wide. Why do you like that song?
Thank you. Because I'm really into folk music. I mean, I consider myself more a folk musician than anything else, I guess. And this is not a lot to say about this, except that it's really traditional. And it's, the only history about it is it's very, very old, came from England.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it were sung today, it would be a lot more about, you know, a couple seeking help, which in, I guess in the day they didn't, you didn't, there really wasn't much option for seeking help. So, you know, to me, it's almost like a cry for marriage counseling.
Okay. That's an interesting take on it. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. That's a,
Yeah, I haven't my chance of seeing these guys in concert or anything. I'd like, what's your aptitude? What is your interest when it comes to music? You like the big venues where the big bands come in, or you like a little corner with a guitar player?
I'm very much a little corner.
Okay,
they're cheaper.
Yeah,
but you don't. You know, I've never really had a desire to go and, you know, and sit in a room with 1,000 people and scream at the Beatles or, you know,
yeah,
Boy George or whoever. That they all date me, I know, but but you know, I would go and you know, I've gone to see Pete Seeger in a small room and various others from that era.
What's the last concert you were at? If you remember? Did you remember? Was it a big name band somewhere? You didn't have to see the Seekers, are they? They're long past for us guys, or were they? I remember.
I don't even remember the last time I went to.
Okay.
You know, you get it's what you get online is so good.
Right.
I know that's not fair to the musicians, but you know, it's just.
No, what's the thing nowadays?
I'd rather play music than listen to it.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah. Okay, with that, let's play it. Go ahead, there, Gord. Thanks so much.
The morning dew, Hi, I'm Tom Woodcock, planning ecologist at the Rare Charitable Research Reserve in Cambridge. Sound FM and the Agriculture Show are helping us promote responsible land management in the region of Waterloo and beyond. Please join us in supporting community radio, and together we can turn the map green.
Hi, I'm Tim. You are listening to CKMS 102.7, RadioWaterloo.ca.
Hello, folks, and thanks once again for joining in with us today at CKMS and at the Agriculture Show. Today's returning guests are Jim Dyer and Gord Grant. We're up to episode number 290, and you could be doing a lot of things on a Tuesday here with us. Thanks so much. And hey, you know what? If you ever want to do your own show, just go to our website, click on that Start a Show thing, and if it's something you always said you want to try for one or two shows, that's good. If you want to do something for like many years with some other theme year, we have a spot for you. We'd be delighted. So we're back to our show today. What we're going to do next is I'm going to ask our guests here, what is it that they do? And with that, I will turn the microphone over to Jim. You go ahead. Tell us, what is it you do?
Tough question, Jeff, because I'm... The greenhouse gas work I was very much in transition. I was basically trying to wind it up, but didn't have a lot of luck doing that. So I'm still a bit involved in that. But I think first you probably want to talk about pollinators, I assume.
Well, we can talk about that certainly in the next part of our show. Just tell us about, like when we'd ask about what's the relevance to agriculture. I just want to find out what you do for now so our audience has an idea who is this person before we talk about the specifics. Does that make sense? You're a retired guy.
No.
Okay.
You've lost me, Jeff.
Okay. You just start there, and if you start saying bad words, I'll cut you off. How's that?
I'm totally relevant to agriculture. I don't know why you questioned me then.
No, you are. It's just a matter of I'm just trying to stage the show so your humble host can figure out what's going on. Go ahead.
I think I'll start talking a little bit about the pollinator work because. One of the things that happened last in the fall of 2022 is that our group, the Cambridge Pollinator Preserve Group, kind of inherited the role of coordinators of the first of, let's call it, the inaugural Cambridge Bee City Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And what the hell does all that mean, right? I should say what the heck, sorry. Canada has created a sort of a network called the Bee Cities. And every city sort of has the right to apply to become a Bee City, and there's certain things they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
They have to sort of, you know, show that they're doing projects and that you know, city awareness. And one of the first commitments is to put on a festival, a pollinator festival.
Right, okay.
And, of course... timing with us, we became Bee City in Cambridge just before the pandemic, and then it came to our festival where we're going to do it. As the pandemic was winding up, and so that added a lot of dynamics as to just how we would do it, how we would get a venue that wouldn't be canceled, that would have access, we wouldn't be rained out, and so our clubhouse. Our clubhouse, I mean, as you know, the Cambridge Pollinator Preserve is an affiliate of the Ancient Mariners Canoe Club, which is in Cambridge.
We certainly have to put a link on our show description of all these great things, Bee Club and Mariners. Go ahead.
Yeah, basically all we do is we have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
But you can, you know, that's pretty easy to find. How we did it was we opened up both ends of the boathouse, which is neat because they're both garage doors at each end, so they get trailers in and out and canoes in and out, which provided the flow through and of air. And then we also went for a walkthrough format rather than having speakers.
Mm-hmm.
We sit down sort of shoulder to shoulder. And we were very fortunate. We got 12 local groups to come with their displays.
That's been pretty good.
The Hort clubs were very interested in. Yeah. You know, saying what they were doing with the pollinators, rares. You know, the Rare Research Reserve. They came with a good display. The Grand River Conservation Authority came with a very good display, and if I'd left anybody out, I mean, they're all were good. They were all good displays. We were very, very much in touch with and aided by City Green. Mm-hmm. We were also fortunate in that our pollinator preserve project is across the ravine from our clubhouse, so we could have groups walk out to the preserve and do a tour. And we ourselves, the Cambridge Pollinator Preserve, we had a display, and we had our portable version of our education panels up. They went there, and we did one.
So this is an award by a national organization. Do you think, hopefully, another 5 years, you'll get the 30-year pin? Is that the goal in mind? Is that a goal you aspire to?
Oh, I like pins. I like, you know, shiny things. Mm-hmm. Sure. You can arrange to get me a 30-year pin or a 20-year pin. Or
I'm just thinking for our listeners, they may want to know if there's this event will be repeated. Will we hear more get-togethers celebrating pollinators and the local connection to large organizations and what you're doing?
Well, I'll stick with this as long as there's interest. One thing I will comment, though, is that our mission is gradually changing. When we started, and here's a little plug, we were the first pollinator habitat project in the region, certainly, and it's probably around even as far as far east as Guelph, we were ahead of anybody doing a pollinator preserve there. We didn't originate the idea; it came from Guelph, but we were the first ones to get it implemented, and we had our project in operation in 2009. And celebrated 10th anniversary of that event in 2019. And we were doing our first, we actually planted a few plants in that summer, and we had our first formal planting operation in 2010. Yeah. So we've got, you know, we've got 12 years of operation in that gave us a lot of experience. We learned a lot about what's the learning process over years, you know, what works, what doesn't. And that you have
how many people are part of your group on average? I'm sure people come and go. How big is your group?
About seven Ancient Mariner members.
Yeah,
and we have one lady who's not a club member, and she's interested enough. She helps out once in a while, but mostly it's pretty well club work. All the work historically has been by our group in the club.
Yeah.
And we, in addition to those members, in our planting day, we put out a request to the club members and. You know, we'll get anywhere from 15 to 20 to 25 some years.
So if people want to support your cause, donate to your budget, that sort of thing, how would they do that?
To be honest, we don't need, we've got lots of money right now.
Cool.
You know, for what we do.
Very nice.
You know, we got, Steve Cambridge is paying for our plants, and it's just a matter of equipment. In fact, I made a point of spending down some of the money we had. By re-equipping our irrigation equipment. Right. Got myself a little red wagon to throw the hoses around, and that was a lot of fun.
Very nice.
And, you know, new pliers and that sort of thing, and spend some money.
Yeah. Oh, sounds pretty good.
And for this festival, we managed to spend quite a bit of money for that because, you know, there was printing and buying this and that, and Bristol boards for people to do displays and... So, I mean, it's a pretty small budget operation.
Yeah, I know, but
it's a lot of volunteer projects are. But
people like to know these sorts of things, how they
they
have some familiarity with it. Let's talk a little bit about the other topic we're going to talk about today, that you're still doing some part-time work for the Agriculture Canada.
Yes, I promised my wife that I would stop taking money.
Yeah.
But it didn't, I end up still working for them, so... Instead of working for very small amounts of money, I would now work for no money. But I think anybody who's been in the research community, they never really quit because they always leave with stuff they want to finish, and they come back and sort of do the emeritus thing.
Mm-hmm.
My main contact in Ottawa is the same. I mean, he had something like a 50-year career. Mm-hmm. You know, like he started right out of university in the Met Service, and then went into Ag Canada, they just kind of, Ray, it's time to leave. It's time to leave, Ray.
Right.
No pressure, but you know, you've been here 50 years, you know, but he's still as active as I am. So, but I think you get to a certain age where you really can't retire. You know, I mean, you can get out of the. We were joking a lot about retiring, but you know, in a lot of ways that you never really leave what you've gave 35, 40 years to. You know?
Right. Yeah.
You know? So some research, people can, I suppose.
So researchers and farmers are the same sort of thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it gets. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Grant, let's tell us about yourself. What are you doing?
Well, I think you've already touched on the one thing, and that's to satisfy this wanderlust to see all of Canada via a converted van. So we've had a season to test that out, and I've had a year of retirement, and now I think we're ready to head west. So we have, again, I said my wife had a large family, and some of them have managed to get out into Saskatchewan, so we'll go that way. And if we like the looks of things, we'll just keep going west. Can maybe even catch up to some former staff people that I worked with as well, too. So there's rumors they might get as far as Vancouver Island. So I would like to go and splash my toes in the Pacific and see if I can get kicked out of Tofino, right? Because us fan people are pretty, you know, we're pretty cheap, and we're known to kind of sneak into places and then sneak out again. But I was mostly going to do that to relatives, so I've been threatening relatives for a year now, and so I want to make good on that. So we're doing that. Most immediately, we've turned into strippers. Janine and I have been stripping doors, so I was going to start the rumor that my pension is so poor that I've had to become a stripper. Mark Reeser, I don't know if he'll listen to this broadcast or not. You know, it's if he could top up that, I'll stop stripping, Mark. So there we go.
Yeah, you have a long career in agriculture as well.
I was listening.
Born and raised in a country kid, right?
Yeah. I was listening with great interest to Jim's experience with pollinators and that sort of thing, because I had dabbled with the beekeeping thing and working for provincially for the bee program for a lot of years, but. Certainly, there's a lot of encouraging things that I heard in the work that Jim's doing here, too. I currently live in Midtown KW, and so I've been watching the bumblebees working our flowers, and I've been also just walking a newly acquired foster grand puppy while my son's away on vacationing, and so I've gotten to, I'm really appreciative of the Midtown area and how little grass there is and how much different diversity there is. There is a whole lot that can happen, I think, with creating diversity in urban environments, and we've lost so much out in the agricultural environment in terms of the kind of forage. From the honeybee side of things, I know that back prior to the war years, we were the premium producer, or the produced more honey than any other part of Canada, like in the terms of like 300 pounds per hive, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess the other thing that interests me is too with diversity is having watched, we've been in this location now where we're living for a couple of years, and this year the number of bumblebees that I see, right? I've kind of watched the large females that come out of hibernation buzzing around, and now there was a load of, you know, the first generation of brood that queen bee raises don't have the nutrition, so they're quite small, so they look like miniature versions, right? So I can kind of watching that progress. So it's so outside of honeybees, there's a whole lot of really interesting stuff with other pollinators. And the other thing we don't think about is we get a lot of free pest control from parasites and parasitoid wasps and that sort of thing that control a lot of stuff. And it's all part and parcel with the pollinator thing. We talk pollinators, and there's a whole lot of really important pollinators that are working for free for us, but there's also a lot of pest control happening for free for us too. And so that comes out of a diverse environment that we've tended to lose with the kind of corn, soy kind of environment, which has been huge, and the hay crops have declined dramatically in the last 20 years, right? So it's encouraging, I think, if we can talk urban people who do have control over a lot of area to diversify. I think it could be quite a significant, like one person, you know, maybe not a lot, but if we get this trend going to diversity, get away from the turf, get into other things. I'm really, really encouraged to see that. Not enough to go back into beekeeping, though. I'm going to travel for a while. I'm going to wander around, see what other people are doing.
All right, that's good. We'll come back and circle back on some of these topics in our next segment, which is what do you know about agriculture? Tell our folks. We're maybe a little ahead of ourselves, but hey, there's lots of more to talk about such things. Guess what? Time for some more music. And what do we got? Tell us what's queued up here. And
well, I see, Jim, you've got Vera Lynn next, and we'll meet again.
Oh, what to say about this song that you... this is so historically meaningful and emotional, and you know it's a period piece. And I found two copies of it on YouTube. One was recorded in 1953, and the other one was 1943, I think it was. The song, I think Vera first recorded in 1939. I think it was written just before that, but it came along just at the right time for the war, and it really speaks to. We'll meet again, don't know where, don't know when, but we'll meet again some sunny day. I mean, you know, that's such a note of hope and optimism for, you know, boys going off, training to go off to war, and, you know, the air crews going off and not knowing if they'll come back. And anyway, this there's a video with this this recording that I used, and this is probably, sound-wise, probably a little lower quality than the 1953 one. It didn't have all the background orchestra and stuff, but to me it was a lot more meaningful, because in the video you can see like hundreds of blue uniform RAF guys sitting, and you can just see them reacting to the lyrics and to the vocal on it. So it, to me, it's just such a powerful song and a reminder of what that was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Why we do remembrance and stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Go ahead.
Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. We smile through, just like you.
Dave Piper from the North Dumfries Historical Preservation Society. What do I like about community radio? Well, I think it helps create an identity for the local community. And all communities have to have some and need some form of identity to appreciate what's going on around them.
I'm Bill McCutcheon. I'm co-chair of the International Plowing Match and Rural Expo. And it will be in Dufferin County in September 19th to the 23rd. And I'm on CKMS 102.7 in Waterloo.
And in fact, you are at 102.7 CKMS. Thank you for listening in today. And listen, we've got a feature on our website called Listen Live, and it's a chat feature. And if you're so inclined, you can send us a message. We'll look at it and look at them in the next segment. Folks, what you do is radiowaterloo.ca/listenlive. And you can just introduce yourself as a guest and give us a question. I think Gord's already talked about what his favorite color is, if we don't talk about things about the show. So just keep that in mind.
Okay, today's guests, Gord Grant and Jim Dyer, and we are into the next part of our show. And this is where I ask my guests a very simple question and a very simple premise, and that is, you know, let's say some random guy walks in our door here, and he says, hey, you three guys there, what do you know about agriculture? What would you tell him? What would you tell him, Jim?
Well, I know agriculture is, you know, it's not like other industries that with respect to environment, that you just, well, stop doing as much and you won't have the impact. I mean, we need food. So there's always going to be food production. Maybe I should have preface that by saying that since retiring, my role in agriculture has really been environmental, and mostly in the greenhouse gas budget for agriculture. For Agriculture Canada. And I guess what I know about agriculture, Canadian agriculture is dominated by livestock.
Interesting in terms of, like, you know, the average city person, they are interested in agriculture. They just want to know about a basic stuff, right? And so it's sort of in that framework. That's a very easy approach to answering the question.
Nothing easy going about me, Jeff. No. You should know that by now.
No, it's good, and you got great talent. Just don't want to feel limited. Just go ahead.
Yeah. I just don't want to pretend that I'm I'm an extension guy. I mean,
So that's
good. Essential. It's essential to do,
yep.
But it's, you know, it's just not something I've ever really done much of. So,
yeah.
I've always been like, you know, my career was in Ottawa, and in Ottawa you tend to be a bit more arm's length from. Ottawa doesn't have any extension role at all. So, but I've seen a lot of ag policy. The big thing, I think the big challenge in Canadian agriculture is income stability, mm-hmm. along with sustainability. I mean, our Canadian agriculture definition of sustainability incorporates the ability to earn a livable income and a stable income.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that has to sort of underpin all of the environmental stuff you do. So I think probably I'm more interested in shifts in commodities and sort of thing. Don't do this, don't do that. If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I think our listener just wanted, they're hearing from you that the agriculture has a infrastructure and they do research and they're guided by how to make a living versus how do you accomplish these goals, all these dynamics. And you're well aware of them from your experience and what you've done, what you understand from your research projects.
Yeah.
So... I think our urban listeners, and that's what this show is not for. We're not going to tell you how to grow an extra ton of corn on every acre of corn. We're not a technical show. We're trying to just...
Don't depend on me for...
We just want to bridge that gap between agriculture and the public, and persons like yourself, Jim, are very important because you got an important part in that process of bringing agriculture to the public, I think. So, yep, that's all. Yep, good.
Okay, I guess the only other thing I would say is that...
Yeah.
One of the sort of, if there's any silver lining to the challenge, big challenge that we're all facing now, which is greenhouse gas emissions and climate change.
Okay. Yep.
It's now a time to look at diversification of production, commodities that could blossom, particularly in southern Ontario. We have the climate, we can grow such a diversity of foods that. You know, and now is a good time to look at that. A lot of those choices could actually dramatically reduce
mm-hmm.
The carbon footprint of agriculture in this province.
Yep. So, folks, what Jim's doing is part of. We all know greenhouse gas is a thing. The question is how much. And if I might paraphrase what Jim's doing, he's discovered that various livestock. Have different capacity to create more or less methane depending on diet and other things, and I think that's what your work is showing, isn't it? You were here last like 2 years ago, and it was the initial report, and now this is the final one. Can you explain, like, how does...
Well, it wasn't the initial, and for reasons I said earlier about my failure to retire, it may not be the final, but it's pretty getting kind of close to the end of that,
right.
of that train okay. of thought, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm finding now that I'm looking at different ways to package the same information as opposed to mm-hmm. really new information. I think what we found in this work is it goes beyond methane. It's that... the non-ruminants are a much more efficient way to produce protein. And as a result of the efficiency, they have lower emission rates for all three of the major gases, not just methane.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly for methane, because they're non-ruminants. And cattle methane comes from the ruminant stomach, so it's, mm-hmm. it's rumination. But let's stop a minute and say, why do I say a pig is more efficient than a cow or a broiler chicken is more efficient than a pig or a cow? I think if you look at the life cycle of a cow versus a pig or a poultry, like a breeding cow spends first couple of years just growing,
mm-hmm.
and then she has to be maintained. She only produces like 5 or 6 babies in her lifetime. Before she herself is culled out.
Mm-hmm.
So half, the result is that about half the Canadian beef herd is breeding stock. Now, you look at pigs. A breeding sow can produce like 2 litters a year of 10, yeah. 11, 12
yeah.
piglets.
And 2.5, I think, is what they go by, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to not overplay it,
like
exaggerate.
Yep.
So if you just look at even the minimum, like 22 piglets a year,
right?
Compared to 5 years over an 8-year lifespan, kind of deal. Five babies over an 8-year lifespan. You can see that the breeding herd for pork is mm-hmm. a very small percentage of the whole hog population, and with broilers it's even more efficient. And this shows in their comparative carbon footprints.
Right.
Like a breeding hen to produce broilers. Breeding hen can produce what 50 fertile eggs a year,
mm-hmm.
40 maybe 40 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, statistically, that mother hen wouldn't even show up in terms of the very the statistically what percentage of the population she represents.
I was really interested in one part of your study which said there is a small niche window for grass fed beef. How does that work?
The sort of simple basic thing about a cow is it's really the only way to convert cellulose into food,
right?
Other than salads,
yeah.
Which isn't really nutritious. Isn't nutrition? It's roughage. But thanks to the ruminant stomach, to the extent that they can. Be fed on forage, hay, pasture, rangeland, silage, corn. That's something that a non-ruminant can't do. Where we found that the kind of question comes in is how much feed grain should you feed an inefficient animal just to get beef when that feed grain would produce proportionally a lot more protein for the same use of feed grains and the same emissions. We represent that as greenhouse gas emissions per unit of protein. And just taking the inverse of what I just said, it's mm-hmm. that indicator is about 4 times as high for a cow as for a pig. Now, where the cattle people would come back and defend that is that because of that forage, you've got land that's under permanent cover, hay and pasture,
mm-hmm.
and range, and you could say it sequesters carbon, but the other argument is that it keeps carbon in the soil. Now, how you would counter that argument is that if you look at the areas that only slightly more feed grains are required to raise the same amount of protein through pork as through cattle. So yes, pork uses slightly more feed grain and more area in feed grains, but they don't require any of that lansin forage. And in the beef cattle diet, most of the land is actually used to grow that forage. So there's a whole lot of land that, if you decide, okay, we're not going to eat, I mean, I'm not going to say don't eat beef, but if you eat less beef, the beef you took out of production, that land would be freed up, and you don't need that land to produce the same amount of in pork. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that land is now free. You can grow, and if it's a good quality land, you can then use it to grow grains. You can use it to, you know, grains for human consumption, oil seeds, you know, whatever. Or you can rewild it. And this is a term that's kind of been bouncing around the last little while. So there's two things about it. First off, the argument I just gave, that that land is not needed to produce the same amount of protein from non-ruminants. The other thing is that which is the last piece of work we actually did, because I just got access to that coefficient, that the source of it have enough confidence in it to let me use it, that if you take over a 20-year period, the rate of carbon that's being put into the soil, just treating it as a flux, which it really isn't, because it ends.
Right.
In other words, the soil gets full of carbon. That annual rate of sequestration, credited against the beef greenhouse gas emission budget, does not bring that budget down. It does not cancel out enough of it so that it then makes it lower than pork or broilers.
I see.
And it's still well above it.
Okay.
So there's two reasons why, you know, but this argument depends on that you're going to talk about amount of protein that you want to produce, and how do you produce it? Whereas the reality is that the market for protein is open ended. But there's there are some ethical questions about that. You know, we go on and on and on exporting or consuming beef, just on and on and on. When, you know, the day is coming when we'll have to be providers of grain to keep people alive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting algorithm. I wouldn't even want to start into it. It's like trying to debate whether McDonald's should have paper cups or porcelain cups. Are you better off to have disposable cups or better off to rewash cups? I don't think they ever resolved it, did they? I'm sure they didn't. It's something so simple is so complex when you get into the numbers.
Well, I hope what I've been talking about isn't as hard to resolve as paper versus porcelain.
I hope so too. it sounds like it could be, but well, good work. You know, you often say I'd rather talk about this research, but you do an important job here because you want to bring the kind of stuff you're doing to the public's attention. That's a great and wonderful thing, and I'm glad you're here to talk about that.
And I think it comes down to that. That if I can actually put in the show, what we're recommending is that first off, the health people will tell you to reduce red meat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not arguing with that, because we start with that as a premise. We're not telling people to eat red meat. We're just saying talk to your doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, Health Canada, same thing.
New food guide. Yep.
But what's more important is the red meat you're allowing yourself. Make more of it pork. Make more of the protein non-red meats, nuts, legumes, soy, all that kind of good stuff.
Right.
If you still want to eat some meat, I mean, I don't know how people feel about grass-fed beef, but it would be nice if you could, you know, when you do have beef, is to get outside the feedlot industry and the whole industrialized food chain that comes with the beef industry, and go to your local beef guy and, you know, through some kind of CSA arrangement to arrange for, you know, a side of beef to come your way, and it's grass fed and you've seen it produced. I know a lot of people in the city can't do that, but that's, you know, kind of an ideal. I mean, we have to deal with the ideal, because like I said, I'm not extension.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just trying to get some basic principles out there.
That's perfect. That's great. I'm looking for the next part when we can circle back to talk about bees, you and Gord. So that's great. But before we finish this segment off, Gord, I'll just throw the question back to you if you want to take a kick at it. What would you tell people about agriculture after all this discussion here?
Well, I'm really grateful, Jeff, that you're letting me follow Jim. That gives me all the good ideas, right? They're not mine at all. I guess if somebody walked in here, the first thing I'd say is that in my experience over a lifetime, agriculture is tremendously resilient and capable of change. Yeah. And you'd be surprised. Agriculture, quite often there are stereotypes that get applied when you get into the general media, and they're so far from the people that I spent a lifetime working with and growing up in. And I had mentioned I was happy to hear Jim talk about pork, because as a little guy sitting at the Sunday table, I used to hear about 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days is the gestation period of the pig, because my grandfather was a pig farmer initially, who then found out about this hybrid seed corn stuff, shipped the pigs, and never looked back. And so I kind of grew up in corn country, and then watched corn country spread across the country, right, mm-hmm. with the development of hybrid seed corn. And and that's why I say it's resilient. It changes. And I had the opportunity over a career as well to work with a lot of farmers when Ontario launched its environmental farm plan program, and you'd be amazed at what farmers are capable of doing once they understand what the risks are and can apply common sense remedies to it, right? Yeah. And so that's the thing about agriculture, is it's resilient, it's capable of change. It responds to the market. I know I'm eating more pork because I just go to the grocery store and price kind of determines what I pick up, right? So there are some natural mechanisms which will mean that the markets will respond and will move on. Mm-hmm. Locally here in the Waterloo region, we can remember when the BSC crisis on and how many people moved into market gardening kind of things, greenhouse kinds of things, and we have a really unique, local way of moving local food in a large way that other communities don't have. So both at the local level and as a general thing, farmers are resilient. They'll change, especially when faced with huge challenges. So that's kind of where I would go with somebody that wanders in and wonders about agriculture.
Yeah, I did good work there. You covered all the really important stuff there. And, hey, you guys, Jim, you're doing research, and you can pass that information on to the public so they know how they go about doing something.
Yeah, before you kick it back over to Jim, I had a question for Jim, and that was,
okay,
did you think about cricket farming when you were doing this measurement? Because I think crickets is the answer to it all here. And we'll throw it back to Jim there if we can. Can I do that, Mr. Host?
I would prefer to play the next song and do that in our follow-up section.
Okay.
The continuing thing.
I got invited in here as guest, and I'm trying to take over the panel. Nope. Pretty soon it'll be Gord Grant at the agriculture show.
That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Who will hear from this Jeff guy anymore, right?
Right on. Okay, let's get this next song on the playlist, and we'll come back, folks, and you can tell, oh my gosh, we've got so many cool things we want to circle back on. I just hope my guests can remember what they want to talk about. It's going to be about bees and honey and all kinds of stuff. What's the next song you got here, Jim? What's going on with this one?
Well, I see I see on there it's Daisy A Day. I think that came out in 73. It's a little 3/4 time waltz. I'm not sure where it fits in terms of the music genres, but I guess it's sort of folky song. It's very touching. It's a pathos story.
So how did you get wind of this guy? I don't recognize the title. Who's this guy?
I first heard that song when it first came out, actually, it hit me. I guess that, because mm-hmm. I was always more interested in folks and rock and roll, something I would go and dance to, at a dance, but but you know what I really wanted to listen to was this kind of mellow instrumental, acoustic instrument music, and just the story. I mean, he's told this plaintive little story about a couple that married his children, and at the end of the song, the guy is still living with the spirit of his wife, even though she's passed on, and that's the whole daisy day. I'll give you a daisy a day. Watch to the top of the hill. Really a tearjerker. Sorry, I'm that kind of guy. I'm a salty kind of guy. But
that's perfect. What I was thinking about more was, like, did you hear this on the radio and you followed up on him? Did a friend recommend this song to you? How did you find this artist?
Oh, God. Like, this was like in the 70s, right?
Okay.
I mean, how did we find songs that we'd, you know, listen to them in the car radio?
You think it was?
Yeah, I did. But I actually owned that album for a long time.
Okay.
Finally, when I moved away to go cruising, I had to get rid of a lot of my all of my albums, but I had that album, and it's I don't know what to tell you other than that.
I mean, no, that's perfect, because it's always fascinating. Some people say, "Well, golly, I was in a rush, traffic jam. I tuned in some station, this stuff came on." Other people say, "Well, my friends are raving about this guy, and I got to like it." Or everybody's why the song, the situation is as interesting as the song. Yeah. Kind of going with that one. So, okay, we'll play the songs, folks. And here we go. Go ahead.
And the night that she came to his bed, he remembers her sweet way of singing, "Honey, has something gone wrong?" He remembers the fun and the teasing, and the reason he wrote her this song. "I'll give you a daisy a day, dear. I'll give you a daisy a day. I'll love you until the rivers run still and the four winds we know blow away." They would walk down the street in the evening, and for years I would see them go by, and their love that was more than the clothes that they wore could be seen in the gleam of their eye. As a kid they would take me for candy, and I loved to go tagging along. We'd hold hands while we walked to the corner, and the old man would sing her his song. "I'll give you a daisy a day, dear. I'll give you a daisy a day. I'll love you until the rivers run still and the four winds we know blow away." Now he walks down the street in the evening, and he stops by the old candy store, and I somehow believe he's believing. He's holding her hand like before, for he feels all her love walking with him, and he smiles at the things she might say. Then the old man walks up to the hilltop and gives her a daisy a day. "I'll give you a daisy a day, dear. I'll give you a daisy a day. I'll love you until the rivers run still and the four winds we know blow away."
And this is Paul Schultz here at CKMS Radio 102.7 on the FM dial. You are listening to The Agricultural Show.
Ontario's rural communities and agri-food sector hold tremendous promise for driving economic growth for the entire province and all Ontarians. By distributing the economic development throughout the province with infrastructure investment in roads, bridges, schools, broadband, energy, and healthcare, we can create new jobs in thriving communities, ease the strain on big city issues of transportation and housing, and most importantly, we can secure a sustainable food system that every Ontarian depends on. A thriving rural economy can spearhead growth for the entire province. Find out more at producingprosperity.ca.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in today. We've gone through the whole shot of our show here. We're in our second last segment, and this is the part I like to call, you know, boy, that host, I wish he would have remembered to ask me this question or what. I don't want to talk more about something. And our guests, very blessed here today. Lots going on. And from our last segment, before the last song we played there, it was posited that crickets, were crickets considered as part of your study, Jim? And then I'll let you guys carry on the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for that, Gord. No, seriously, I appreciate you getting into that, because technically, no, but certainly implicitly. I'm a great believer in you know, getting outside of sort of warm-blooded protein for sources of complete protein. One thing, I guess, a start point of that, if you look at the pulse proteins, which we did one of the papers was on pulses, soybeans and chickpeas, and you know they have about four or five major ones. And their carbon footprints are so low compared to any form of livestock that it's almost, you know, it almost goes without saying. I mean, you almost end up with a trivial scientific result. But I sort of take that as a metaphor for, you know, any of the non warm blooded sources of protein, and that's something we're going to have to look at. I mean, protein is going to be as much a sort of resource crunch as basic food eventually. I mean, it has to be eventually with climate change and losing a lot of land when the climate happens and ever growing population. Anytime I've talked to like friends about eating crickets, go yuck, you know. But I mean, I'd be quite happy to try them. And there are other options. There's one that project, and I can't really. Because I was shown in kind of in confidence, but I think I'm free to tell you the species. Another species that is raising a lot of excitement is the black soldier worm, which is comes from Africa. But they, you know, I've seen it grown in special heated houses, and the productivity is just amazing. I don't know if we can eat it ourselves, but the other thing we could consider with the non-vertebrate protein is protein supplements for livestock. You know, yeah. You know, that's probably the first entry in it. The same way soybeans. I mean, soybeans just livestock, but you know, soybean is a good human food. But it's kind of gotten a bad rap. But definitely, I mean, I haven't had a chance to try crickets, but I certainly would. You know, and I mean, like also, sorry, I should let you in here, but other ones, I've also seen a clam farm down in Florida. You know, and there's something with very, very low carbon footprint. You know, you're just basically just harvesting seawater, just pumping seawater through your vats. So, anyway, what do you think of that, Gord?
I think it's great, actually, and I think I haven't looked recently, but there have been I think a number of cricket ranches in Ontario that have done some pioneering work, and I think they were even getting into our distribution system with the cricket flour, but I've never. I had always threatened to bring home-baked muffins for the other staff at Ontario Federation of Agriculture when I worked with them, but I never. That was one of those things that I kind of regret never having done was bring the muffins for a meeting. So, but maybe if well, Jeff Gord, invites Gord, me I, again, I let's do this again, and I'll
You bring me a cricket flour muffin. I would love to try it.
Yeah, it'd be good backgrounding. I
think. Video going for that.
Yeah. But
it doesn't taste good.
The cricket thing wasn't just because I studied entomology at Guelph, but it was partly because I think it kind of would fit into kind of a niche thing in the way, like, you know, we've talked about how grass-fed beef can be a bit of a niche. Well, I'm not sure how fussy crickets are about what they eat, and so we do create, even in grain production, a lot of waste. Mm-hmm. And how we can put that to use, that might give us another option for creating protein.
So here's one thought I had about, you know, the invertebrate proteins. I think kind of the holy grail would be to find a cold-blooded creature that can essentially convert cellulose to food.
Good idea.
You know, and I'm not sure that they do it with crickets, but crickets probably pretty close. I,
yeah. Yeah.
You probably know more about it than I do at this point. But.
Yeah. I wasn't allowed to start a cricket ranch in my basement, so I can't speak with – I haven't researched it to that degree. But another time while we're eating cricket flour muffins, let's come back around to that.
Yeah.
All right. I guess the other before we started, I said, I think, Jeff, you brought me here so I can ask the questions that Jim can say the no, Gord. There are no silly questions. I'm just wondering if we have sort of a general audience listening. I keep hearing how it's cow farts, but, Jim, it's not cow farts that we're worried about with greenhouse gas.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, no, I mean, it's like... Every mammal, pardon the term, farts. So, I mean, it's, you know, to the extent that methane is coming out the back end, it's no more than any other mammal. So it's not an appreciable amount. Where it comes from is the ruminant stomach. It all comes out the front because that's the unique thing about a ruminant is that they do that conversion from breaking down of cellulose into, you know, a digestible starch or protein in that ruminant stomach, and so the byproduct has to come out. They regurgitate it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's burping.
Yeah. Have there been bees? Talk about bees. Can we eat bees?
Can you eat bees? Well, you eat honey, which I had always wanted to make a container for kids. It was like a little bee that you pushed and it barfed it out, right, and call it bee barf. So I guess in a way, right, you're getting pretty intimate with your insect when you're eating honey. But there are things like royal jelly, which again isn't the bee. If you're a bear, you love bees, and they're quite edible, right? People think bears love honey. Well, they get the honey, but they're actually after the immature stages, the larval stages, the brood.
Yeah, you know, it comes back to protein.
Yeah.
That's what they're really after is the protein in the larva.
Right.
Can we eat those?
Well, I used to graft for queens, in which you take a really tiny, you try to get as close to an egg stage as you can and then graft it and then to raise a queen bee. And if it didn't go well, I would just lick it off with my tongue because that was the easiest way to deal with it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, and, you know, I never developed a taste, and it would be really difficult to harvest that and counterproductive in terms of honey production. So I don't see it with bees, Jeff. I can't see it. But we beekeepers use a lot of different products of the hive, but not the bee itself, right?
Yeah, and that you'd probably have to kill the hive to get all the protein.
Yeah,
because you have to take out that whole generation.
Yeah,
and you have to destroy all their cells. And
now you could use it in connection with varroa mite. Has been a huge problem for beekeepers, and it tends to really like the drone larvae, who have a few days more development period than the regular worker bee. And so you could, and a queen will lay a drone. Partly based on the size of the cell, so you could actually have drone frames where you where that's raised nothing but drones, and then remove those drone frames and then harvest that. But again, it's not feasible.
There are better ways to do it. There are better ways to get that protein.
There's going to be a tough market to sell that, right? Yeah. Pickled drone larvae. I don't see it. No, you won't find it on your shelf anytime soon, Jeff.
Yeah. One of the crazy ideas that I was playing around with when I was thinking a lot about protein in the early stages was raising insects, like grazing insects, cellulose converting insects, and then using those as fish food. So instead of grinding up herring and sardine to feed to salmon.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're feeding them something that's terrestrial.
But termites, would that qualify?
Actually, termites is something I thought about because termites have a, as an entomologist, you know that termites, they don't have this sort of egg larva pupa. You know, it's all, you know, just a progression to the nymph stages. So, I think termites would be a possibility. As an insect protein source,
yeah.
But I mean, that's just an idea, and you know, you'd have to go. First off, they would be tropical. Probably the only the tropical countries could do it.
Well,
but it's something that maybe.
There are some households dealing with termites in Kitchener, Guelph.
Are they really termites, or are they?
They're termites.
Real termites.
Yeah.
Not ants.
Not carpenter ants. Termites. Right. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There had been. Are you going to get sued by the real estate board if I keep going with this? You do have to be a little bit careful in parts of Guelph and parts of Kitchener and Waterloo because there are pockets of termite infestation.
Yeah, I hear that.
Right? Yeah. So, and this is getting far away from agriculture, but it's important if you're buying houses, right, to keep that as a consideration, right? Because the termites, carpenter ants have to be there a long time to do damage, but termites, if they get a good start, can bring a house down, so...
Yeah, and they are capable of. I guess this is really why I was sort of intrigued with that idea, because termites actually do convert cellulose to usable.
Yeah,
they are little ruminants.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
it's
perfect.
Yeah.
So I can see Jim's not going to retire anytime soon. He's moving right on to the invertebrate protein, so that's good. My job's here. I can wander off in the West doing nothing, knowing that Jim's here hard working on measuring the...
My wife to hear this conversation.
it's not showing up on the chat here. We're okay so far.
Show, I'll shut it off right about here.
Okay. Listen, you guys, thanks so much for doing that conversation. I know those topics you guys just handled it really well because... It's your thing, you know, bees and stuff. I'm just delighted to have. We're so lucky on the show to have you guys here talking about that, all this sort of stuff. But time marches on, so we need to keep on going after our show regime here. And it would be time now for our last song. And I'm looking at Fats Domino, Blueberry Hill on the screen. That's a pretty familiar. What are you doing here, Jim? What do you think about this song? What's going on here?
Well, it was never considered a folk song, but really it is, because it goes back. It's pre-war, pre-Second World War, when it was written, and it's a song that has been covered by a lot of artists. You know, it sounds sort of bluesy and that sort of thing, but really it's just a nostalgic look back at a time and a place, with happier time and his memory of a place where that took. That happened, and it of course is a love lost. He's looking back at the memory of a good memory from a love he lost, and he does it like with a lot of electronic, but the song I think lends itself to acoustic interpretation. But you have to like how this guy did it.
So. Okay, good song, classic. Go ahead, Gord.
The moon stood still. But all of the vows you made are never to be. So we're apart. You fought a missile. B.
Okay, folks, we're back, and thank you so much for listening in today. My gosh, we're in the last bit of our show, and we want to ask our questions, a few guests, a few ideas what's moving forward for them. But, hey, first of all, I'm going to ask them to help us do a station promo. And, Jim, you got a microphone there. Would you like to go up there and give us a little how do you do? Go ahead.
Okay, I'm Jim Dyer, and I am here with the radio station CKMS, Community Radio, signal 102.7 FM. Radio Waterloo.
Gord Grant here from Midtown Kitchener-Waterloo, and I'm around the corner around the block at CKMS 102.7 FM on your radio dial, Radio Waterloo.
Good work, you guys. Just like we practiced at 7 o'clock this morning, right? Perfect. They'll be on the air for a while, and hopefully we can get some more of those great things from you all over time. So the last bit of our show before we get out of here today and let the studio ready for the next person is what are you guys doing next? So I asked a question. I'll ask you first, Jim. You got the microphone. What are you doing next 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, 20 years? What are you doing next 2 hours?
What am I doing in the next 2 hours? I'm going to drop in on a little shop called Guitar Corner. Good friend of such a good friend. I can't remember his name right now, but I just got some stuff
Walsh,
I want him to look
Walsh,
at.
Right? The Walsh?
No, well, he works there, but
okay.
I used to go in there all the time. I haven't been for a few years.
Right.
Then I've got a social event at the Cambridge or at our canoe club, Ancient Mariner Canoe Club. I've got to drop in and. And then I guess the rest of the week I got to get back to talking to CBC again and talking to the Canadian Pork Council, which I'm supposed to have a chat with them by phone or video on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, busy, and after that, well, I'll just take life one day at a time.
Any holidays for the rest of summer? We're at July 18th already. Are you going to try to grab the cottage for a couple of days up in August sometime? That's right.
No, we went to we spent a month in Newfoundland. Spent the month of June in Newfoundland and driving around so I think that's all we're going to do for this summer. I think we'll just enjoy the summer at home and maybe just drive around a bit and don a sports car when you feel like it. We're retired, right?
That's 2 months, 2 years. What are you thinking? 2 years? You're gonna? Think you guess when? What about any music? You're thinking? What are you thinking about your music? You're gonna try to throw another CD out or something like that, or?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking of another CD, but I'd rather not talk about it yet because I don't know just what it's.
Yeah.
But I got a bunch of songs I wrote about, like Canadian topics, and mostly Quebec and Ontario.
Okay.
I'd like to do something around that, but we'll see. Yeah. A bunch of other songs too, so I don't know. We'll see, but I certainly music's going to be a big part of my next 2 years. I hope be a lot of banjo and ukulele going on. So.
Good stuff. All right, Mr. Grant, how about yourself? What about you doing next 2 hours, 2 days, 2 years, 20 years? You want to go that far? What about 2 days, 2 hours? What are you doing 2 hours?
Yeah. Well, let's do 2 hours. 2 hours, I think I'll probably spend the next 2 hours throwing a tennis ball for an overactive young Belgian sheepdog cross Malinois that I'm babysitting for my son. 2 weeks from now, I'm hoping we're laying back, sitting on the shores of Lake Erie down on Pelee Island, as far south as we possibly can get, before we head as far west as we possibly can get.
I can tell our listeners this is a routine thing for you.
The family all gets together on Pelee Island. We have fortunate enough to have a sister-in-law who has probably cottages as far south as you can get on on Canadian soil, where you're allowed to get. I mean, there's still Middle Island, but nobody's, not even smugglers are there anymore. There's that. Two years?
Yeah, it's 2 months, 2 years, 2 years. Well, next,
yeah, 2 years. I will probably be slowing down on the rambling thing with the van. We'll have stripped everything we possibly can strip in the house. and I might maybe will look at more profitable ways to use my energies. Like Jim's putting me to shame here, right? And I didn't hear him say he was going to be researching those crickets 2 years from now. But anyway, maybe
I got that for you.
Okay, there. I'll look into that. I'll at least look into things that eat cellulose, and I'll do that much for you, Jim.
Yeah, sounds okay. Good. All right. And that's good stuff. And you know what, folks? First of all, folks, just want, on behalf of our listeners, just thanks so much for coming in today and doing this show. It was good fun. We hope we'll do something like this again, talking about greenhouse gas studies and beekeeping. Who doesn't like talking about beekeeping? It's a good deal. And yes.
I just wanted to mention I didn't offer any music up because when Jeff phoned yesterday, I was on YouTube looking for long playing videos to help dogs with separation anxiety, and your audience would all be sleeping, Jeff, if I had brought some of those tunes.
Okay, next time we'll figure out how to do that. So with that, folks, we're going to wrap up today's show, episode number 290. On July the 18th, Gord Grant and Jim Dyer were our guests today, and we'll be back in 6 days and 22 hours for a replay or else a new show. And don't forget, folks, if you eat this week, thank a farmer, and if you're a farmer, thank a consumer. Thanks so much. See you later. Bye for now.